Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Geek Actually After Show, episode 101 for the 25th of September, 2010. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined in studio, well, continued to be joined in studio by Josh Philpott.
Hi.
And Callum.
Wilson Austin.
That's the one. It's getting a very long day, let me tell you. It's becoming a very long day. As we said right at the beginning of this whole day recording, well, in tech, actually, I had 4 hours sleep last night, and after being in the studio for 4 hours doing the shows, you start to wear down a little bit. But I'm okay, and we will continue on, because in our after show, now, let's just do a quick disclaimer here and say that if this is your first experience with a Geek Actually show, I would actually say stop listening right at this moment in time, because this is not really a real show. And you'll notice that there was no Stitcher.com ad before it or anything like that, because this doesn't go out on Stitcher. This is our after show. After we finish doing our two main shows, Tech Actually and Film Actually, which you can find on iTunes, we basically just kind of come back, turn the microphones back on, and then talk about whatever. Whatever is kind of we're thinking about.
Whatever.
So I would actually say go have a listen to Tech Actually or Film Actually, then come back and have a listen to this if you so please. Okay, now there's a couple things I wanted to talk about.
Okay,
guys. First thing I wanted to talk about was, of course, the fall TV season, which has just started like a wave, like a tsunami. All this new product starts to roll out. Yeah. And I got to say, I've actually watched a few of the season premieres of some of the shows. I know you guys probably haven't seen some of these yet, but I just thought I'd throw out some of my opinions really quickly. One of them is Modern Family. Now, I've talked about Modern Family before. Modern Family is, quite frankly, I think the best sitcom on television at the moment. It is up there in quality to what Arrested Development was in its day.
I love
Modern Family. I think the actors are doing a tremendous job. The writers are doing a tremendous job. It's just a really, really funny show.
I think it's fantastic. I understand about up to.
I think it's up to the same standard. Personal feelings, and I think season two started really strong. I was a bit worried that it was going to be a one-season wonder, and they weren't going to be able to continue. But the first episode back of season two is very funny, and it's got some really good stuff in it. I also have to say that I saw the season opener for the new season of Chuck, which is a personal favorite. And, I mean, I really like Chuck in his first couple of seasons. I got to say, though, that I put this on Twitter this week as well, which is that I thought the Chuck season four, its opener, was really lackluster. It really lacking in energy. Yes, it had Dolph Lundgren in it. Yes, it had Linda Hamilton in it. You know, it's got all these guest stars, but it just felt empty. It felt really empty. And it's almost like one of the things I said to Katie, my wife, when we were watching it was, it's like they've overhauled the series so much from what it started as that it's not the same show anymore. And I'll keep watching it because I really like the cast. And I really like, you know, the characters, but I'm not sure if it's going to last past this season. I think if they don't do some quick, smart fix-ups to this thing, it's just not doing the same thing at the moment. It's just not there in that first season. When you come back with a season opener, you got to come back strong. You got to come back and make sure people are going to join you again, and this is not how to do it. And the other one I wanted to mention, have you guys seen any of the new season lineup yet?
No.
At all? No? The other one I wanted to mention was How I Met Your Mother, which was a series I really enjoy.
Sam? I don't know if it's just I'm not a TV person, but I find it a lot harder to get sort of invested in a series, and I'm not a fan of How I Met Your Mother.
Well, funny thing is, How I Met Your Mother was one of those shows where when I first saw it, I watched a couple of episodes here and there, and I went, yeah, it doesn't do anything for me. Just doesn't do anything for me. And yeah, you know, Neil Patrick Harris was funny, but, you know, it just didn't do anything for me. And I was actually given season one on DVD as a Father's Day present. Oh, no, birthday present, I think it was last year. And I sat and I watched it in one run. Like, you know, over the course of a couple of days, watched back-to-back episodes. And I got a real appreciation for what they're doing. And that show's really, really subversive as well. The stuff they're getting away with on television and being so considered to be wholesome television and the stuff that they're talking about is actually quite naughty
yeah.
in many ways. And very, and the characters are, once again, the actors are doing a really good job. They're really carrying it. And Neil Patrick Harris for the win. I mean, the guy's a, guy's a legend. And I really enjoyed it. And then I've since gone on to watch and bought all the seasons. Mm-hmm. And I've been watching. Actually, season five, I think. I think it's season five is actually this season. Season five? Season four? Whatever. Anyway, the new season. And I got to say that I actually really liked it. I thought the season opener was very strong. I thought they're carrying on. But my first thought to this was there is part of me, this little niggling part of me at the back of my head that actually wishes the series would end.
And I got, didn't you originally say that there was a particular point that they were going to?
Like, well, they're going to where he meets the mother. I mean, that's the whole point, is that once he meets the mother, the series is over, right? No. So it's all about how he met the mother, right? And there's kind of part of me now that wishes this is the last season. I kind of wish that he meets the mother and they finish it.
Resolve it.
Because I would like to see them go out while they're still strong.
Yeah.
Because this sort of show has it has an expiration date. Mm. And they're going to jump the shark if they drag this on too long. And it's going to really just going to fall flat. Mm. You know, it's kind of like Chuck. Chuck probably should have finished.
Yeah.
Because last year I would have said, no, don't let it finish. Fix it. Now I look at it and go, I kind of think you've missed it now. Move on.
Season two had a really strong ending and a really strong start to season three. Halfway through season three, I was bored.
Chuck, yeah.
Yeah. I was just like, guys, just cut it off. Finish it. Like, I mean, it's not a story that lends itself to a long period of time.
No, and
like,
it's kind of over now, unfortunately.
Exactly. Just, like, give it a good, solid ending, just the kind of ending. It's one of those shows. It's popcorn TV, so it's not, it doesn't need a huge, you know, sort of mind-changing ending. It just needs a happy ending. So fucking finish it, happy ending it, and get it done.
Yeah, well, RMS Face in our chat room said some series should be kept as a mini-series. And I agree. And then there are some series which I wish weren't. And that brings me to this new British series of Sherlock.
Yeah.
Now, Dave Kosicki... Sorry?
You go first.
I was about to say, Dave Kosicki told me about this last week and said, have I seen the new Sherlock series? And I said, I hadn't. I've managed to get the first three episodes, and I've watched two of those. And it just gets better and better, and I think this is just a great show from the producers of Doctor Who. And I go, this is just terrific stuff. And then I just found out they only made three episodes. It is a limited series. That's it. It's finished. And so
Finish well?
Well, I haven't seen the third episode yet, so I don't know how it's going to end. So I'm hoping it's only the end of the season, and they'll bring it back for their movie-length episodes. So they are long episodes. Yeah. And I kind of go, but this is a series I don't want to end. You know, I would love to see this go on for a while because it's great. I really enjoy it. There was a lot of – my first thought was when I heard that they modernized Sherlock Holmes into the modern era, I went kind of but it works so well.
Yeah.
You know, and the guy who actually plays Sherlock Holmes, I'm sure at some point would have been a contender for Doctor Who. I mean, he's got that strange kind of Doctor Who energy to him. He mumbles a lot to himself and stuff like that. And you sit there and go, yeah, this is definitely those producers. And, you know, they're borrowing directly from the original source materials for their stories, and they've modernized it into the modern world. And what's his name from the original Office as Watson?
Martin Freeman.
Martin Freeman, thank you. As Watson is terrific. You know, he's just terrific.
He's doing everything.
He is. He's a bit like the go-to guy at the moment. What are you going to say about it?
Oh, I was going to say I've heard it's very good.
Yeah, no, it's great.
I thought you were going to bag it out.
No, no, I really wish there was more of it. So,
Well, that's good.
Anyway, so that's kind of the fall season where it stands. I've also got House, the latest episode of House to watch, but I think House may have actually jumped the shark. So, at the end of last season, I was kind of ready to be resigned on House. So
yeah, I watched it for a while, and then I remember at one point where it's like, oh wait, he's gone mad, and this whole thing's been in his head for ages, and then it was like, oh, he's gone mad again, and it's like, I just don't care. It's like, all right, he's crazy. It's just,
there's only so far you can drag that basic premise.
Which series, sorry?
House.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
There's only so far you can drag that basic premise of how long he can be bitter and horrible to everybody without a resolution.
The last season I got, which was the last...
He's a great character.
I think season five was the last one I watched, and it just started getting dumb. Like, it's just got silly. Like, the dialogue's still fresh, and, you know, they still spend a lot of time trying to push the series, but even Hugh Laurie doesn't feel into it anymore.
No.
Like, it's kind of,
and they've
like
changed
a paycheck.
I mean, they've pretty much changed the cast over, rotated the cast around him, you know. And so you kind of go, I'm just wondering whether or not it has any more legs in it either. I'm wondering if it needs to finally move on. Mm. There's a whole bunch of television to come. This season's going to be a big one, I think. So
fucking good, so soon. So soon.
He's touching me. He's touching me.
He's touching. Now, I also wanted to mention very quickly, and then I'll let you guys throw something out. I also wanted to mention really quickly, have you guys heard about this new processor from Intel? This is
not the tech person.
No, this is this. I don't have the details in front of me. I've just been hearing what I've been hearing, and I'm in two minds about this. The bottom line is, Intel is releasing a new chip, a new processor, which will actually be crippled.
Mm.
And the idea is that you can buy a low-end chip for your computer, and you can put this processor in, and then as you need to upgrade it, you can actually buy, like $50 at a time, you can buy new features on the chip, and they unlock on the chip.
That's like having... That's the same thing that we talked about ages ago, having DLC on a disc.
Yes! Thank you. Interestingly enough...
I'm unfortunately, I sit with Dave with this one because I don't actually see this as a problem because the dwarfed price tag is the big thing here.
Yeah, now this is where Josh and I were talking about this before we actually started Tech Action today. Mm. It didn't make it into the tech news because I don't have all the details on it with the exact pricing and everything, but I thought this is good after-show fodder. Look, I'm in two minds because at one stage I'm agree with Callum, which is like you could sit there and go, all the features are there. If you bought a new car and they said, well, if you actually want the...
if you want the brakes.
If you want the radiator, that's going to cost you an extra $50. If you want the... You know, but... There are other things with cars, which you could look at it and say, you can buy a car and then you could say, I'm going to add the add-on of power windows or I'm going to add the add-on of, you know, whatever, right? Mm. Spoilers or what have you. The question I have is there a difference between, okay, I go out and I'm going to upgrade my computer, but I can't afford the high-end chip. I can only afford a budget chip. Okay, so I buy a budget chip and I buy a motherboard that can support a higher chip so that I can upgrade the chip later. So later, I'm going to go out, buy myself a higher chip, open up my machine, put the chip in, and change it over, right? Is there any difference to that than there is to buying this chip, putting it in as the low-cost chip, and when I can afford to get better features or need to upgrade, I just pay them, and it just unlocks.
Mm. That's good for a specific dilemma, but I think on a larger scale, that's a bit silly. I don't know, I wouldn't want to do
it. I just don't know how you're going to justify the lower price on an expensive chip. Like, that's where I kind of get a little bit weirded out. Because, I mean, like, the chips can't be that cheap. Like, they can't be, like, Celeron prices because it just wouldn't work. Like, you can't sell. The hardware costs money.
Sure. But if you could, I mean, if Intel gambled.
Yeah.
And basically said, we're gambling on the fact that we know people will upgrade this chip later. Right, then they could sell at a lower price knowing that they're going to recoup that cost later.
Well, I disagree because if the chip was that expensive, like the high-end chip, if the chip was that expensive to manufacture, like $500 worth of manufacturing, right, and you're going to sell it $100, what's your return rate off that? Yeah, if you're selling it individually as the more expensive chip, you make $500 off each one of those chips.
Sure, but these chips aren't that expensive to start with. I mean, you can buy a Core 2 Duo right now or, you know, what have you, for less than $100. You know,
no,
what I mean?
Look, I mean, I agree with that, but that's what I'm saying. It's like return rate for the current system is the total amount for each one of the chips. If you sell me the very expensive i7 chip dwarfed down to an i3, as an example, for people that are wondering in normal speak, it's like if you're going to get the really expensive chip that is running at the really cheap chips settings, right? What if I am just Joe Blog or Joe Blogs' wife that doesn't give a crap until 3 years later when it becomes so bad they can't use it? This is how people use computers. Hmm. This isn't going to work. Yeah.
The flaw in the plan is the end user, the people who are just don't really care. They don't want like some super duper thing.
And how long is it going to be? How long is it going to be before we figure out ways to just hack it?
Well, I was about to say this chip is a hacker's dream.
Exactly.
Let's face it. There is going to be a bunch of people out there who work out the codes really easy, and they're going to say, cool, I'll go out and buy the really cheap chip and have all the features because I'll just hack it up.
I'm sure Intel will have some sort of...
Well, look, and there, Intel is already Intel
over if you do that.
Intel has already played with many years ago. I don't know if you guys remember, but many years ago, Intel actually had a system where they actually put internal serial numbers on the chips of the Pentium I want to say Pentium 2s. And the idea was that the chip had the facility to gather up all the information about your system, the software you were running and everything else, and report it back to Intel.
Yeah.
And everybody lost their friggin' minds over this, basically saying complete invasion of privacy, and Intel had to disable the feature.
Well, they say they did.
Well, they were Skynet, they were court-ordered to disable it. If they didn't, they'd be in deep shtuck. But,
that word, shtuck.
But, all right, how about deep caca? Like you said something. So anyway, I'm in two minds about this. I don't know. What are you guys rambling about?
You're surrounded by weirdos. I was just laughing at that.
Pot, kettle, black. I'm in two minds about this. I don't know.
Yeah.
What I feel about this. It's
Does
the chat room actually know anything about this?
I want better information about it.
Does the chat room actually know anything?
About this. Callison says, I've read somewhere the middle range of chips is where they make the most profit, so they need a low-end chip, but they can no longer make actual low-end chips. See, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, what he's saying is that the most profit is made from middle-range chips. The middle-range chips is where they make the most profit, but they also need a low-end chip. But it's no longer economical to make low-end chips. So this is a way that they can actually make the same chip. They're already manufacturing them, but they can cripple the same chip and put out the same chip that they've already made, crippled at a low-end cost, because they might make that cost.
That makes more sense.
That does make more sense. Numero Zero says, overclocking! Absolutely. So
can you imagine an overclocking a chip that could actually handle it? You'd like triple your CPU usage, and for some strange reason, it would just keep working.
Yeah. Northy says, I hate this.
Northy
says, I hate this because of what might come next. A 2 terabyte drive with only 200 gigabyte accessible. You want to unlock more?
Look, I don't care as long as it's not costing us any more to make. That's the honest truth. It's like, if I'm not paying a different price for the same technology.
And I'm also not opposed to it as well. If, here's the big if by the time I unlock all the features, it hasn't cost me more to do it that way than just buy it up front.
Yeah. No, I agreed.
If it costs the same amount, but it's like paying off an installments thing, you know? And if it's going to cost the same amount in the long run to do it that way, then that's fine. But if it's going to cost you, like, there's a tax by paying it off or unlocking it, it's going to cost you more.
Yeah.
That,
well, a lot of PC users don't realize that when they buy their computer, they're already missing like 20 to 25 gigs worth of data because of all the crappy stuff that's installed to start with.
Mike, the famous Windows crapware.
Yeah, exactly. Like the 10,000 things on the computer that they will never need or use, or recovery drives that are set up separately. So people that are doing their own recoveries, and there's a drive built in which has another 10 gigs worth of installs on it. Like, these sort of things.
No, what I love is when they say you get a certain amount of disk space, and then they partition it to make the second drive, so you don't really get that much because the other partition's carrying all the system files. It's like, that's just cheating.
Yeah.
That's like in the days of, I shouldn't say the days because we still see it today, but that's like video cards with shared memory, where they say, you get 1 gig of RAM. By the way, 512 megs of that is going to the video card. You know, it's like, no, not fair. Not fair at all. Mm. All right.
My computer's still lying in pieces on the floor of my house.
Real technical, aren't you?
I just, every time I look at it, I'm like, I need to change the power source. Fuck.
God, the power source is one of the simplest things to change. 4 screws and it's done. That.
Anyway,
that's why I'm not on the tech show.
Yes. Okay. Now, I also want to say, unless do you guys got anything you want to throw out there?
Nope.
No, you're happy playing with your iPhone over there. I just want to throw out for a second that I actually went to see The Last Airbender for a second time this week.
I saw it.
What did you think?
I thought it was the worst movie I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I did too. And I got to say, though, here's the interesting one for you. I saw it a second time because I had to take a little geek to see it for his show, which will come out next week. It's actually not as bad the second time around, and I can explain. I can explain the logic.
You're expecting it to be that bad.
Because your expectations are so much lower. Once your expectations are that low, you know, anything seems good.
I went into it going, look, it looks pretty rubbish, and I'm running very, very low on my enthusiasm for M. Night Shyamalan. And I know you guys like hating on him, but I don't hate him as much as Josh does. But I really, really am getting to the point where I'm like, dude, just it must have been a fluke.
You know what the funny thing about M. Night Shyamalan is? I don't hate him. I don't hate him. I think he
I'm sure he's a fine person.
Well, no, actually, I think he's actually kind of an arrogant schmuck. But in the interviews I've seen of him, you know, that's all I can go by. But the thing about him is that I want to like his films. And I keep going to his films in the hope that we will get something out of him, because I thought The Sixth Sense was fabulous, and I didn't like anything else afterwards. And I keep hoping, beyond hope, that we will get another film like The Sixth Sense out of him.
So I liked Sixth Sense, Signs.
See, I thought, no, and you know what? Signs was one of those films. I love the first half of Signs. I thought the first half of Signs, once again, Joaquin Phoenix, fine form.
Yeah, very good.
Fine form. I thought Mel Gibson, fine form. I thought the tension and the mystery was really interesting. I thought it had great humor. And I was there with him. I was with him on that film until about the three-quarter mark. And then it just kind of, the entire film fell to shit. And not only did it fall to shit, it just ended. The ending on that film is so abrupt that I kind of went, this film needed another half an hour. You know,
oh, I could have done with that.
Yeah, this film needed another half an hour easily because it just kind of ended. And I thought that totally tarnished my opinion of the whole film because the ending was so bad.
Mm.
And it's one of those situations where I sit there and go, and that's why I had high hopes for Last Airbender, quite frankly, was I thought, I think he's actually, or at the time, I actually thought he was not a bad director. And I thought, wouldn't it be nice to see him being controlled by stronger producers, maybe working from a source material that wasn't his, you know?
Mm. And stuff very, like that. Very strong source material.
And now we have seen him working with strong producers and source material that wasn't his, and unfortunately it's crap.
It's The Happening bad.
It's worse than The Happening.
Yeah, I have to say that.
I think it's worse than The Happening because at least The Happening was unintentionally funny. Mm-hmm. It was so bad. It was unintentionally funny.
Well, I laughed in this one just because I was surprised.
Last Airbender, I wasn't laughing. Last Airbender, I went, how could you fuck this up?
Yeah, it's the more I watch of the series, it's just like, it doesn't take much effort to really get this right. All you got to do is borrow.
This is not a hard film to write. You've got it. It's sitting in front of you. It's not even adapting it from a book. You've got dialogue right in front of you.
Images, everything.
You know, it's like, it's not that hard a film to make. Okay, it's a hard film to abridge, to try and figure out what to cut out. And that's one of the issues that I found on the second viewing was he tried to put too much into it. He could have just taken the Blue Spirit sequence out of it altogether, because if you're not going to do it justice, then what's the point in doing it?
The whole thing with the... can we do spoilers?
Yeah, look, spoilers for Last Airbender.
Spoilers for a movie you just really shouldn't go watch. Yeah,
this is the after show. You shouldn't go see it anyway. If you're worried
about spoilers, you shouldn't be watching a film show anyway.
If you're worried about spoilers
for this movie.
Iron Mouse Face says Unbreakable was awesome.
Unbreakable was awesome. I agree with you, Iron Mouse Face.
I actually disagree. I think Unbreakable was interesting, but I was ultimately disappointed by it. And it was one of those films where I sat there, I had high hopes for it. It's the film following up The Sixth Sense. And ultimately, I was disappointed with it. I was disappointed with its pace. I was disappointed with its resolution. I wanted it to be really good. Mm. And I kind of came away from it just going, ah, God, it just didn't quite get there. But I have to say, Unbreakable is better than a lot of his stuff to come.
I still think the only two that I can watch are the first ones that I remember, which are
Sixth Sense
and that. And Sixth Sense I will always hate because, I mean, honestly, when you know the twist, I think that movie's really dumb.
See, this I disagree with you.
So I watched it again after I saw it. I watched it on the second and a few other times. I thought it was really good as well.
No, I do.
Because you watch it again and you're like,
you're looking for the clues.
He's been a ghost the whole time. Yeah. By the way, he's a ghost. Spoilers for Sixth Sense. The whole time.
No, I actually disagree because I actually think Sixth Sense holds up when you actually watch it, and you can actually, knowing the resolution, you start to look for all the clues and hints and everything else. It's actually very tight. It's very well. It's a lot like Usual Suspects. Usual Suspects, once you know the big twist reveal at the end, it still holds up as a film.
Absolutely.
I didn't like The Usual Suspects.
I love The Usual Suspects.
I know everyone my dad told me about it. He's like, you gotta see this film, it's amazing. And I watched it and I got really bored.
Oh man.
Like halfway through. And I don't know why.
To me, still Bryan Singer's finest film.
Better than X-Men 2?
Yeah. I love X-Men too, but I think Usual Suspects was such a surprise, and it was such a unique film experience at its time that I really, really liked it. I thought it was terrific. Yeah. And I think when you once you know the twist, you start going over it, looking for all the clues and hints throughout it to see if it holds water. Mm. And it's very clever how he pulls it all together. Mm. Yeah, so no, I actually, yeah, Sixth Sense I still think is a great film. I really think it's a really good film. And as I say, everything after Signs, okay, Signs was for me the downfall. And from there onwards, you've got The Village, you've got The Lady in the Water, you've got The Happening. Each one of these films progressively worse the one before it. You know?
I like, Sixth Sense I think is great. Unbreakable, I thought was great. Signs I thought was great. And then he was like, I really like these movies. I really like this director. And then, what was the next one?
The Village.
And I was really excited for The Village. Really enjoying The Village. I'm going to spoil it for everyone else.
After show is kind of spoiler laden, so just be aware of that.
And then you find out, and there's like these monsters in the woods. It's really weird what's going on. And then you find out that the monsters are just the people in suits. And I was like, really? All right, I'll go with you. And then by the end of the movie, I was just like, I wanted to enjoy that so much, but I didn't at all.
Look,
and then
I mean, honestly,
The Happening.
Yeah.
The Lady in the Water was the next one, wasn't it?
Lady in the Water.
I liked Lady in the Water.
I hated that film.
I don't care what anyone says.
Okay,
It was a bit self-indulgent. All right, probably. Well. Obviously,
it's incredibly self-indulgent.
We know that he's a bit arrogant about the whole movie thing, and we probably shouldn't have done that. But I think as a fairy tale, as like a kid's fairy tale, I thought it worked really well. And I like the monsters, I like the story, the characters. Paul Giamatti's really good. The chick.
Paul Giamatti was the only thing that kept me in that cinema.
He's really good. Everyone except M. Night Shyamalan. All the actors in that movie except M. Night Shyamalan are...
surprised on first viewing, and I'm going to correct this. On first viewing, I was very surprised that he wasn't in Avatar, in Last Airbender, because he's Indian or of Indian descent, and of course,
would have been a bad guy then.
And well, of course, the Fire Nation were all of Indian descent. And I thought, oh, this is perfect.
Except the king, who looked like he was like sort of.
Oh, he's a New Zealander.
New Zealander, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They were all over the place with the race.
Yeah, the whole... We went into this last week. We won't do it again. But the point is that I was waiting for M. Night Shyamalan to turn up as a firebender or something like that somewhere in it, because he always puts himself in his movies. And I was surprised that he wasn't in it. On second viewing, he's in it.
Where is he? I found him.
Where is he?
He's actually in... You know the scene where they walk into the earthbending village? And they have the whole thing. There's one of the guards. He's got a helmet on covering most of his face. And he's the one who actually says, "She's a waterbender. Get her." That's him. So he's got one line, and he is in the movie.
He's a bit more subtle about it.
So I was, yeah,
no, he's more subtle about it because he would have been universally freaking.
Yeah,
could
you
destroyed.
Imagine if he turned up as the Fire Lord or something like that?
Awesome. That would have made the film for me.
He's playing Aang.
He's Aang.
That would have been appropriate.
There you go. That would have been a better film. I just want to point out that I said that Last Airbender was better the second time around because of your expectations lower. Northia said chickenpox isn't as bad the second time around either, but I still don't want to catch it again.
Word, Northia. Word.
And I also got a Twitter message from B. Wayne from Real Junkies when I actually put it onto my Twitter post that I was going to see Last Airbender again, and he just simply wrote back, "Better you than me."
Well, good. I'm glad to see that at least, you know, they hated that film.
Yes.
It really makes me sad because that's really good cartoons.
And they're fantastic cartoons.
They're doing a new one. Like sort of a steampunk.
I thought it was like 100 years later or something like that.
Well, Aang's still alive.
Oh, it is Aang. So I thought it was going to be like the new Avatar take.
Well, Aang's like an old man now. And it's about his son, I think, and his son's apprentice in sort of a steampunk city. So,
I'd be curious to see if they can do it again. That's the question.
I think it sounds like a cool idea. So it's like Avatar with a chick, and then it's like in sort of a bit more technology.
I like it.
I'm curious. I'm a purist, and I'm a big fan of the original Last Airbender. So I'll be very curious to see what they actually do. I.M. Assface says, I think Shyamalan is a bad director and always was. He just got lucky twice.
Well, happening. That was...
Happening. Really?
My dad liked that movie.
The trees, really?
My dad liked it, and I went into it going, maybe it won't be as bad as I thought it would be.
Let's do Mark Wahlberg here. Don't you guys want to know about the bees? Bees! That was a terrible film.
Go see Wicked Man.
All right, guys. I want to talk about one more thing, and then we're going to get out of here because it's getting hot and stuffy in this studio anyway. And that is, and this is going to be a topical subject, I guess. People are going to like this. I want to talk about unsimulated sex in mainstream movies. So put the kids away. Get them out of the room. All right.
Talk about sex.
It's baby.
You're both. You did not need to go there. That's it. I'm out.
All right. Now, the reason why I want to bring this up is because I watched a movie during the week called All About Anna, which is an arty film, you know, one of these independent films. And it has full penetrative sex, blowjobs, and cum shots in it. And yet, it's not considered a porn film. It's considered art. Okay?
So what separates it, Dave?
Well, and this is what I wanted to discuss
out.
Because I just looked at it and going,
budget.
With that, our and nine songs, Michael Winterbottom's nine songs.
A lot of sex in that.
A lot of sex in that. Blowjob, cum scene. Okay? Catherine Brûlé's romance. A lot of sex in that. There's the film...
You're writing this down, Callum?
Must watch it.
And you didn't... Oh, no, that was in the cut. That's right. That was fake. And there's films that are very fake, that are fake but look very real as well. But I'm talking about films where they actually do it. Mm. Okay? I mean, we're talking about films where they actually do it. My argument...
There's a French one I watch as well.
Al Pacino, where they were... where there was, like, so realistic that...
You think of Cruising.
Possibly.
But yeah, they didn't actually show. They didn't actually show anything though. Yeah. Apparently, the director's cut of Cruising, which does not exist now, I was actually reading a thing on the was directed by William Friedkin, who directed The Exorcist. Mm. Great film, mind you. Cruising is a thoroughly disturbing film in many ways, just because of its brutality. But a fantastic film. And apparently the director's cut, the original cut of the film, was like 25 minutes longer, and he actually inserted like one frame. Subliminal cuts of, like, you know, erect male penises and all sorts of stuff in it. And a lot of it was cut from the film. And he's often talked about trying to restore a director's cut, but can't find the footage. He thinks the studio destroyed it.
Oh, wow.
Because it was pretty hard going. It's all about the heavy leather gay scene. Mm. And he goes undercover because there's a serial killer killing them. And he gets kind of really into the world that he's investigating. Mm. He's deep, deep, deep undercover, you know? I'm not trying to make a joke of it. I'm not trying to be light of it. I'm saying he goes so far that he's not allowed to carry a badge. Nobody knows he's a cop, you know, and all this stuff. He's like completely covert. And he kind of gets so sucked into this world that he finds it hard to get out of it afterwards when it's all said and done. Great film. And as I say, I think the studio got really cold feet because Friedkin really pushed the boundaries on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. And recently we had Short Bus, which has... a lot of real penetrative sex in it as well. Now, the reason why I bring this up is not just to talk about, you know...
Because we just like
penetration. We like to say, you know, we like to say cock and penetration.
It's fun to say rude words on the internet.
Why we're bringing it up is because I want to know why there seems to be this double standard.
I don't know. Like, I mean, some films I find very hard to watch with it, and it's kind of for that nature. My Private Hell, if you've ever watched that, it's a French film.
Oh, it's Catherine Brûlé again. That's not My Night in Hell. What's it called?
My Private Hell, I thought it was.
That's the one with the period scene and the whole bit, yeah? That's the one.
It's gay guys trying to...
film. Okay, different
yeah,
film.
Yeah, no. This guy basically gets this girl to have sex with him so he can appear to be... It's a very complicated storyline. But basically, yeah, it has some scenes that are very hard to watch because it's kind of sex when people aren't really into sex. And it's kind of gross.
The name for that.
Well, oddly enough, no.
I.M. Assface in the chat room said, I heard Antichrist is meant to have real sex. Maybe I heard wrong. No, actually, apparently it does have some scenes in it which has real penetrative sex. But they're body doubles.
Yeah, they had a body double.
They're body doubles that actually did it.
Yeah.
But yeah, once again, another art film. Where is this line drawn? Where is it we sit there and say we look at a film with John Holmes in it, or we look at a film, you know, with, you know, whoever the latest porn star is, and we go, oh, it's pornography, it's terrible. But then those same people will go to the cinema and go see, you know, Ken Park or
Irreversible. I just say that movie for anyone that is just going to turn around and
say, terrific film though.
Oh, dude, it's a great film, but I just sit there and go, that's pretty much exactly where your line... You want a line...
There it is, it's drawn right down the middle of that movie. But, I mean, I remember when I saw Romance, Catherine Brûlé's Romance, and I went, oh, okay, you know, I've been told this is supposed to be pretty hard-hitting and blah, 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 and I'm watching it, and suddenly she goes down on the guy. There's a scene where she's through a wall. The wall is at her waist. They put her through a hole, and guys are fucking her on the other side of the wall, so they can't see her, and they're, you know, blowing their loads all over her stomach and everything. I'm sitting there going, I'm sorry, how is this not porn? You know? It's like, I'm sitting there looking at it going, how is this not porn at this point? And I have no problem with porn, don't get me wrong, I got porn downstairs, you know? It's like, I have no problem with porn, I'm not trying to make a judgment call on porn, I'm just trying to say, where's the line drawn on this double standard? Why is it that Romance gets rated R in Australia, which the guidelines of the of our censorship board are very, very clear. I've actually downloaded the PDF files. I have their guidelines. The guidelines strictly say in an R-rated film they are not allowed to show an erect male member and no penetration. And yet, Romance has got an R rating.
So they're allowed to show completely naked female, though?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you're allowed to show completely naked female, but you're not allowed to show penetration.
In any explicit way.
That's why you get the R. If you're an MA, you have to have justification for the scene. But in an R rating, you can get away with having exploitive sex. You cannot show... You can even show a penis. You can't show an erect male penis. And you cannot show penetration of any kind. And yet, Short Bus, which is an English film, because I used to think maybe it was being a foreign language. I used to think maybe if you put subtitles on it, you get a free pass or something, you know? And I actually pondered at one point thinking to myself, wouldn't it be funny? You go out and you make a porn film.
And then put subtitles
on. In French. Yeah. But you only speak French and put subtitles on and see if you can get that passed. Just, you know, on the grounds that it was in French, you know? Yeah. But then we get something like Short Bus that comes along. And Short Bus is in English. And it has a guy bending over, doing this yoga move, and sucking himself off until he ejaculates on his face. And you sit and go, I'm sorry, according to the
censorship board.
The OFLC in Australia, that is an X-rated scene.
Yeah.
And yet the film has got an R rating. You know? Why is there this double standard? Why is it we suddenly go, oh, it's for art. We're allowed to do that. You know? I'm sorry, I think some porn films are very arty. Yes. I think House of Dreams with Tori Wells, made back in 1990, whatever it was, is a particularly arty film. And in fact, to argue that point, I know many legitimate filmmaker friends of mine who have a copy of that film because it's so beautifully shot in 35 mil. They sit there and go, I want my film to look like that.
You know? I'm taking notes out of a porn
film.
They
sit there and go, Andrew Blake knows how to shoot a film. He just happens to be making porn. You know, it's beautifully lit and beautifully shot. And these legitimate filmmakers going, this is a fantastic film. Just technically, it's a fantastic film. Yet that's considered pornography.
Dude, I think there's going to be a lot of this until the day that we review our...
sorry, your chat room, I just look over at IMR's face and just put, it's called pretentious bullshit, Dave.
Well, look, I mean, I can kind of see that, but look, I mean, we can call it whatever we want, but the honest truth is this will never change until our government changes, because our government is still based on a Christian religion... based.
But is it the government, though? Because even if the government changed, even if they brought back the X rating and they said, you know, porn is still going to be considered porn. Even in America, where they are liberal and porn is allowed, there's a line between pornography and art.
I think, storyline. That's
even in actual art.
Yeah.
People just doing naked performance art and things like that, but it's still art as opposed to...
Do you remember Puppetry of the Penis? Not so long ago.
That was supposed to be comedy, not porn.
Yeah, no. I would definitely say that it's always going to be that way because at this stage there's that line, and it's a very thin line, but it's a line where basically the story still has to be what the film is based on. And I mean, I could still think you can draw that line.
I've seen some pretty hilarious
poems with
stories.
No, yeah, but
pirates.
Like
the Ghostbusters ones.
Yeah, but like technically, I mean, yeah, I can always still still feel the line for that. That it's basically more based around the porn than it is anything else. They're just creating areas around the concept of having sex. It's like with these movies, usually the subject matter I found is usually relatively bleak. There's not usually very many happy art porn films. Like
maybe that's what they should start making.
No, because then they wouldn't get passed. Exactly. If they were happy, they get signed for the next rating.
Exactly. This is what I'm saying. It's like there's that thing where it's like the storyline has to obviously not be... It has to be story, then sex, not the other way around.
Yeah, I guess the secret is... I think you're right, Josh. I think the secret is as long as we have lots of shots where they mournfully look out windows in between the sex, then you've got...
It's
highly, highly dependent on context of what the nudity is in, obviously.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I was saying, the fact that the goal of the film can't be to arouse people via what you're seeing. Like, that
if you get aroused, that's just a bonus.
Yeah. Okay, but all right, let's go back to this film all about Anna that I watched, all right? Mm. There is a scene in this film. Now, you tell me if you haven't seen this scene before. Okay, all right, and just imagine it's got the wah-wah pedal in the background, all right? Yeah. She's painting her house. Okay, she's on the ladder, and she's got a white shirt on, and her boyfriend walks in, and he's standing at the bottom of the ladder, and he looks up. She's not wearing any panties.
Yeah.
So she's painting the house basically in the nude under this white shirt, and he kind of starts getting a bit frisky with her, and she comes down the ladder, and then they start stripping in clothes, and then he fucks her against the wall. Full penetrative sex. And you sit there and go, I'm sorry, I've seen that in about 5 porn films. That is not art.
It's about the budget on the set behind it, Dave, obviously. It's like, if it's obvious that they've just set up in someone's house and like they're not actually painting the wall and, you know, the painting uniforms aren't very obvious, then that's why it's called a porn film.
Oh, and there's also the little bit before where they playfully paint each other.
Exactly.
Beforehand.
Yeah.
That's porn.
No, that was in All About Anna. That's what I'm saying. They did that in All About Anna. Yeah. Anyway.
It's a very, very strange line, Dave, and I don't think there'll ever really be an answer.
Now, I have to say that I am all for porn in mainstream cinema. All right? I have no problem. I'm curious about where the hypocrisy of this starts. Yeah. Stanley Kubrick.
Every conversation back to Piranha 3D, but Piranha 3D, anyone? That 15 minutes of the classical music? Well,
that was
what's
art.
Her face? Kelly
that
Brooke?
Was art. That was art.
That was art.
Arty.
Yeah, that was arty. That was softcore pornography. But anyway, I will also say that Stanley Kubrick, I'll bring this back to, we'll bring this back to Earth for a minute and then we'll get out of here. Stanley Kubrick, it is reported. We don't know if this is true or not, but it is reported that Stanley Kubrick sat watching a porn film one day in his private theater in his house with his other filmmaker friends.
That'd be amazing. Just having like a private giant
porn cinema. Yeah, yeah. And he was watching, and he basically made a comment where he said, wouldn't it be fascinating to do this on a big budget? Right? And he was basically saying, we should be able to do this on a big budget. And so there was a lot of speculation.
Then he made Eyes Wide Shut.
At one point, that Eyes Wide Shut was going to be like this. There was one point where everybody, when we heard that there was going to be all this sex in Eyes Wide Shut, that this was going to be this Stanley Kubrick big budget porn film. And of course, it wasn't in the end. But it just kind of makes you wonder, if Stanley Kubrick had made a porn film, how would the industry have changed? Because suddenly you would have had Kubrick's name on it. So, I mean, it's already bad enough, or I shouldn't say bad enough, that's the wrong wording, but it's already important enough that somebody like Michael Winterbottom has done something like 9 Songs. Mm. But you sit there and go, if you had the clout of somebody like Kubrick or Spielberg who turn around and go, I'm going to show a dick going into a pussy, what the hell? You know? And the repercussions of that on mainstream cinema, of what suddenly people go, well, Kubrick did it. Hmm. Or Spielberg.
Maybe that's
did
why
it,
they had him
or...
killed.
You think it was the conspiracy. Like the MPAA took him out? Yeah. Oh, that's terrible. But I mean, yeah. So it makes your mind wonder. Hmm. Makes you wonder about.
I would have liked to have seen that.
Me
see
too.
What he did.
Me too. I would like to have seen a mainstream director really push that boundary and say, "Screw you! I'm gonna put this in here and see what happens." You know?
Oh well, maybe one day we will.
Maybe. Well, no, he won't. He's dead.
No, not from him. He probably won't. Not from him, Dave. Obviously. I mean, from someone of the caliber.
I want to see Spielberg direct a porn film. It'll have lots of streaming light through the scenes.
No, it would never happen. The man has a PG rating in his mind. That's all he has, in my opinion.
Okay, let's ponder now.
He has a PG rating.
I'm just joking about that.
Which directors do you think would have it in them? Martin Scorsese.
I think David Fincher should do one.
David Fincher? Yeah, no, I could
in
see
the
that.
Style of Martin Scorsese? Fight Club.
He's got that kind of gritty style. Like
he's got
gritty
style. I just don't see him ever doing porn. Just
all right, how about...
M. Night Shyamalan.
But what's the twist?
The twist is it's actually a man.
She's a
dude.
No, she's a dude!
We've done that before.
All right, how about...
Michael Bay has been suggested. Michael Bay could totally...
Explosive porn. Yeah, all right. Callison, go for it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Transformers. There was a chick Transformer in the last one. The motorbike.
Oh, yeah.
And then maybe you could get it past
I tried to put
the
film out of my mind.
Because they're robots. She's a robot.
Thus it becomes...
Oh, yeah. See, we've got it sorted out. With Megan Fox? No, not like she looks now.
No. Oh, I'd have her in a porn film.
Have you seen her now?
I don't care. I'd have her in a porn film.
I don't think you want to see her now. She looks like someone grabbed a plastic bat and stretched over her face and then set it on fire. Okay? That's what her face looks like.
And
now.
All we can say that is plastic surgery gone bad.
Yeah. Anyway. Yes.
She reminds me of Michael Jackson now. Oh, dear. All right. This is degraded into... Look, if you have any comments or thoughts on unsimulated sex in mainstream movies, I'd love to hear about them. Send your thoughts to feedback@geekactually.com, and I'll bring that up on screen for our visual watchers. There we go, feedback@geekactually.com. Please, we'd love to know what you think, and also what you're thinking of the new fall season. If you're watching any of the shows, love to know your thoughts on those as well. You can also send us a voicemail, 02-8011-3167. 8011-3167. That's an 02 number at Sydney, Australia, or Skype ID Geek Actually, but you will have to become a friend first, which takes a little bit of time. Couple shout outs. Calling you out again, Movie Fan House. Movie Fan House. MovieFanHouse.com.
We're going to make Movie Fan House an offer they can't refuse.
Mention you every week, guys. You guys get mentioned every week on my show. And Brad, right this instant, you get mentioned too. Find more at MovieFanHouse.com. Let's see. I wonder if they're actually listening.
Oh, well, we'll find out.
We'll find out. Real Junkies Podcast. These guys drink a lot. They watch a lot of movies. They're a lot of fun. Like them a lot. And Josh wants to take them on
head
the
to head.
Resident Evil Aftermath.
Bring it.
Bring it on,
I've seen it. It gave me brain aids.
I haven't
I'm
seen
ready.
It yet. I'm dying to. WeekendRonin.com.
Brain aids or?
No, why? Brain aids. Yeah, we'll discuss this when we review
WeekendRonin.com is where you find their podcast and everything else about their contact details, or search for them on iTunes, REEL Junkies. And, of course, we have DLC. Where are we? There we are.
RawDLC.com. Go see it. That's all. I'm tired.
Yeah, we're all tired here. We're moving on. One more. Where are we? Here we are. Cartoonist Josh Spencer, thank you for our cartoons. You were wonderful. AttackNinja.blogspot.com. And if you want to follow me at Twitter.com. /Dave McVeigh. Facebook.com/Dave McVeigh or Facebook.com/GeekActually is our fan page. Callum, how can people find out more about you?
Callum Wilson Austin on Facebook. My site is www.bloodyjaw.com.
Bloodyjaw.com. You have to tell me that in advance and I can bring it up on screen.
Yes, actually. Yeah, I have a little graphic I made and everything.
Well, send me the graphic. I'll put it on the board for whenever you're around. Okay. Guys, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a wonderful day. It is a very long day, and I'm very, very tired. So we're going to move on. As I say, if you have any comments about anything we've talked about on any of our shows, send us your feedback. Send us your voicemails. We'd love to hear from you. And we will catch you all next week. See you, guys. Oh, hold on. No, not yet. Wait a minute. And. Okay, now. Sure. Bye, guys.